This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, I'm Ken Tangen. This is episode 77 of What's It Like. My guest is Bill Sturridge. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm doing good, Ken. Thanks.
And you are somewhere in California.
I'm in downtown San Francisco.
Ah. Did you grow up in that area?
I grew up in northern Ohio in Cleveland suburbs.
Well, you're a long way from home.
A long way from home. Been here about 25 years.
Did you come from a large family?
Small family. I was born in West Virginia, so I'm a genuine hillbilly. But grew up in northern Ohio. Went to engineering school there and left there in the early 80s.
Hmm. Who had the biggest influence on your life when you were growing up?
Biggest influence on my life? Father, probably. And he was a math teacher and excelled in analysis and logic and that sort of thing, and taught me the difference between fact and fiction and imaginary and real things. So I think he probably gets that award.
What was your major challenge as a child?
Well, I was a left-handed middle child, and I'm not really sure whether there's anything to the stereotype of left-handed middle child, but I probably fit that stereotype. Whether that was through cause or coincidence, that is a little bit on the moody side and a little bit introverted and more interested in art and music than anyone I knew or anyone in my family.
Hmm. With an interest in art and music, how'd you end up in engineering?
I think probably growing up in the 70s, when times were tough, even compared to now, I think I erred toward conservatism and income potential. In the early 70s, the highest paid bachelor's degree was bachelor's in engineering, so that's what I went after.
Mm-hmm. In the 70s, I decided I was going to save the world, which is why I went into psychology.
Aha! We've both been successful then.
Yes. Or not, depending on your point of view. So what exactly do you do?
I work right now and have for the last 15 or so years in a field that is totally unrelated to what I went to school for. I got out of school and went into aerospace and remained there for about 15 or so years. And as a result of getting married and realizing that neither my wife and I, or neither of us, or let's say it this way, both of us could not keep our current careers and live in the same city in the United States. And I was in Southern California at the time, and she was in San Francisco. And aerospace was entering a dark era at that point, and I decided her career was more interesting or better for her to keep than mine was for me to keep. So I moved to San Francisco and said, what can I do here? And I decided to enter the world of computer science and software.
You didn't have any background into that before?
I had no background in that whatsoever. I had taken one class in college in Fortran programming language back in the early 70s. In my aerospace days, I had been involved with, in a supervisory and managerial capacity, a lot of devices that had software in them, but that was about my only connection to the world of software, and none of that was PC software, you know, end-user software, which is what I ended up in when I came here.
So how do you, now that you have an idea of what you want to do, how do you do that?
How do you make that transition? I did it self-taught, obviously, as is actually the case with quite a few software professionals. I bought a lot of books, and I dedicated myself to them day and night for about a year. And during that time, I had a few consulting engagements that kind of spanned the old career and the new career. So I was lucky to get those, and that enabled me to get my feet wet and, you know, be in a, be working in a domain that I was familiar with. And in that situation, the client thinks you're a software genius as long as you're about 5 minutes ahead of them. And that wasn't too hard to do. But that was my transition. That lasted about a year. And then I started a consultancy here and got some small gigs, $30,000-$40,000 range. And a couple of years later, I had a few people working with me and was doing very large projects for healthcare and pharmaceutical.
Hmm. When you were studying, you didn't have a product in mind. You just studied the computer programming?
Actually, I did have a product in mind. I had worked with a particular piece of software in aerospace that did calculations of probabilistic risk analysis, very heavy calculation stuff. And I really despised that software. And at some point I got an idea, hey, I could do a better job of this. So I built that product, a new version of it on my own. It had about 10,000 lines of code in it. It took me better part of a year to write. And I actually sold it to a couple of companies, aerospace companies. And I realized that it really wasn't the right time for me to be building and selling an end-user product like that. It seemed to make more sense to do consulting engagements, that is, you know, work for hire, where somebody else was determining what they wanted built, and I was designing and implementing it.
So did you write it in Fortran?
The hot language in those days for rapid development was Visual Basic out of Microsoft. It had just come on the market and enabled you to write Windows programs very easily compared to the previous tool sets that were available for Windows.
Yes, I remember my Fortran class too. Was happy to get out of it and gone to something else. What is the best thing about your job?
Best thing about my job is I own my schedule, and that's the worst thing about my job. So the good and bad aspects of that are yesterday was an absolutely beautiful day here for San Francisco. It was high 60s, sunny, no wind. So at noon, I hopped on the bicycle and rode my bike for 5 hours nonstop. The bad aspect of that is I'm always at work. And right now, I don't rent an office outside of my house. I've gone back and forth between in-home office and out-of-home office. And the benefit of out-of-home office is it helps you a little bit to leave work behind. Of course, if you're like me, then you end up leaving the office down the street that you're paying rent to be in, walking home and turning on the computer at home and doing some work there. So right now I'm not trying to trick myself with that approach, but I find myself working at 10 or 11 p.m. often.
What type of person would be good at your job?
My job is a little bit broader than a computer programmer. So I do specification work and design with customers commonly. So in what I'm doing right now, I need a good understanding of computer science, but also language skills, communication skills in general. But the ability to write is fairly important, and I actually do a lot of writing where I'm explaining to subcontractors what needs to be done. And you know, there's a in the last 10 years or a little longer than that, there's been various attempts in the world of software to facilitate writing software without long detailed specifications like we used in engineering. And you're probably familiar with words like RAD, Rapid Application Design, Agile, these sorts of things. Those things can work well. But obviously, an iterative design and development approach requires some skills beyond programming, and they require that people doing coding have a better understanding of the end product than would otherwise be the case. This approach is somewhat at odds with outsourcing for that reason. It requires good communication between all the people involved. So I find myself in that role quite a bit.
So how does it work? A company comes to you with a problem, or you go to a company and say, hey, I got a great solution for whatever problem you have?
Halfway between those. So because I work a lot in a couple of different domains, pharmaceuticals being one, news and media being another, I and my team acquire familiarity with the particulars of those businesses. That makes us a little bit more attractive than the average guy off the street to those businesses, and it ends up with us marketing ourselves directly to those types of folks.
And what you're selling them is a customization of a process?
No, it is a... we start with a business problem on their end, and that is typically something that they want to automate, that is to turn into software. And we go through that process of translating a business problem into a set of business requirements, then into a set of software requirements, and then building the software.
So these are usually mechanical acts?
Paper-based news, and they knew that they had to do something to deal with electronic transmission of news, and unlike a lot of what I'll call nominally bad customers, Associated Press was a very good customer. They understood that since they were behind in this area, it didn't really make sense for them to come up with an idea of an implementation. You know, they didn't know what they want, and they kind of came to us and said, tell us what we want, tell us where we should be heading. So I hired a group of business analysts that I work with commonly, and we spent some time with the Associated Press trying to figure out what their real requirements should be, what made sense to them for making that transition. And then we did preliminary design, and that was the end of our engagement. We actually didn't write software beyond prototype for that, but it dealt with management of stories and images and how they would be transmitted to various devices that we were anticipating for the future, you know, devices beyond the PC, let's say, telephones and televisions.
Well, in one way, you really haven't left engineering very far.
That's true.
Because you start with the problem and you figure out what to do and you have a whole process, and it's like engineering in a different realm.
Yes. And obviously there's a lot of similarity between general engineering design and software engineering, although they're certainly not the same thing.
Mm-hmm. If one wanted to, how would they get a job like yours?
The best way to get a job like mine is to go to school in computer science, which I did not do. And while you're in school learning computer science, bear in mind that programming is becoming a smaller and smaller subset of what is needed in the, you know, in business.
Mm-hmm.
Related to computer software.
Maybe take some engineering classes?
Take some engineering classes, take some writing classes, a speech class, and Western cultural traditions,
mm-hmm.
or history or something like that. It makes you worldly.
If there is such a thing, what is a typical day like for you?
Let's see. Typical day for me is probably an hour of phone meetings or less, phone or Skype, that sort of thing. Rarely do I meet people in person. I probably spend an hour or so writing, an hour on the phone, and because I'm the nerd part of me, the nerd part of engineering, still likes writing code, I probably do that about 3 or 4 hours a day. And if I don't have code to write for my job, I do it for my hobby.
Once a programmer, always a programmer.
Probably, and you know, in that regard, I was probably a programmer before I left the world of engineering, because I used to get to the computer department in the company, engineering companies that I worked for. I'd get permission from them to use their computers late at night, and I would go in and write Fortran programs to analyze survey data from cave exploration, which was my hobby back then.
You and Bill Gates.
I'm not sure I have all that much in common with Bill Gates.
Bill, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Boy, I'm not sure that I agree with you that probably everybody does, but I'm not sure that a lot of us know how we give ourselves motivation. I've never had the problem of, gee, I'm self-employed or owner of a small company. I'm tempted to goof off and watch TV all day. I've never really had that problem. So I'm not sure. I take days off. I work my own hours. I usually end up working Saturdays and Sundays and taking, you know, days in the middle of the week off. But I'm not sure Not sure how I motivate myself. I think I probably, the best answer to that would probably be that I ended up doing work that I like for the most part. And baby needs shoes. Food has to be on the table. But I don't think I'm really, you know, I don't begrudgingly say, oh, gosh, I need money. I better get to work here.
Well, let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
I listen to music. Mm. Ride roller skates, rollerblades, bicycles. Fortunately, I'm in a place where we have pretty decent weather all year. So I get out even at lunchtime just about every day.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Fortunately, I don't believe I have had any such challenges to this point. I've had parts of my work life that I try fairly hard to avoid ever being in. And first of those that comes to mind is legal problems. Now, the U.S. Corporate structure works well for that. But like most companies in California, I have on a couple occasions ended up in legal disputes, and you know, the so-called corporate veil protects, you know, my personal assets from those types of problems. Nevertheless, I end up losing a lot of sleep when I'm dealing with conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, in my case, those have been minor and short-lived.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, what would you say?
I would encourage the graduates to, whatever they sought in terms of education, to make sure that it was sufficiently broad, because I feel that modern society overvalues specialization, and that we've kind of created a tyranny of perfection or tyranny of expertise, and it is not serving us well. The people who have most enjoyed working with have been people with a broad or diverse background. For example, two of the people that in software that I have had long relationships with, one of them was a music major, piano, and was recruited by Microsoft out of a music school. So good on Microsoft for doing that sort of thing. Another guy has a degree in computer science and a degree in psychology. So I would encourage people to, you know, follow their passion and all that sort of thing, but to make sure that they had diverse interests and include some history or biology or something completely different in your studies to give you a better perspective.
Mm-hmm. There certainly has been a more recent focus on skill development and not so much on liberal education.
Correct. Absolutely. In the case of engineering, I'll give you one example that I cite commonly with regard to this point. Aerospace engineering is one of the few walks of life where the need for a generalist is so great that it can't be ignored. For example, if the marketing folks went to engineering and said, well, we need an airplane that'll fly 300 people across the Pacific without refueling, it would be a ridiculous question for an engineer, upon giving that requirement, to say, what size of fuel pump do we need? So determining the size of the fuel pump would be about 15 levels down in a system-based hierarchical analysis. We would understand that we couldn't build that airplane by getting 100 guys in a room, one who was an expert on hydraulics, one who was an expert on writing Fortran, and another who was an expert in propulsion. All those experts together do not equal the generalist who is in actuality an aircraft designer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very obvious that you need somebody like that in that particular situation. I think it's much less obvious that we need generalists in other areas like banking and insurance and so forth. The need may not be as great, but it seems to me that we almost totally ignore the need for those types of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, even in the technology area, Steve Jobs was a generalist.
Correct.
He was not the engineer. He was not a programmer, but he had a broad vision.
Yes. Good example.
I want to thank Bill Sturge for joining me today. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Ken. My pleasure.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.